Well, Shabbat Shalom, everyone. And what a beautiful Shabbat it is, to say the least. What a gorgeous day. Humidity going down? Yeah, I think so. Yeah, humidity's going down. Last week, I spoke to you about a very important subject, and that was Ahavat Yisrael from the Parsha of Balak, where we met the reluctant prophet who, instead of cursing Israel, blessed Israel. And the message that I gave had to do with Ahavat Yisrael, loving Israel, particularly the segment of Israel that we represent here at Congregation Ruach Israel. And we talked a lot about how to love this congregation and the movement that it represents for the long haul. I don't want to review much of that message, but I do feel it was a rather important one, and I want to suggest that if you haven't heard it, because you might not have been able to be here, go to the web. We're grateful to Ralph, who is doing such a great job making sure that the weekly drosh is on the web, and want to encourage you all to listen to it. I think it is of particular importance for us. Now, as Dave mentioned, we are entering into a period where we collectively introspect about our own failings and how we collectively as a people might have contributed to the destruction of the temples. And Dave mentioned two destructions, the 586 and then the destruction of the temple during the time of Yeshua. The rabbis comment about the destruction of the temple in the year 70 by saying that the reason for it had to do with baseless hatred. A lack of love among Israel was a major contributing factor. Now today, by contrast, I would like to talk not about a lack of love, but I would like to talk about a profound expression of love, a multifaceted kind of love that we read about in our Torah portion. When we read about the daughters of Zelophehad, who appeared before Moses, and I'm not going to read the passage again, but I'm just going to go through the basic outline of the story again. What happened was this. There were five sisters who had a father who had passed away, maybe recently before they came before Moses. And they went to Moses and said, "Our dad was a good guy. He was not one of the rebellious people who signed on with Korach in the rebellion that we read about earlier. He was a good guy, but he had no sons. And we're his daughters, and we're concerned about the fact that his inheritance in Israel will be forever lost because there's no one to pass it on to. And so, we're appealing to you, Moses, because this seems like a huge injustice to us, and we just can't be quiet about it." So that's the basic outline of the story. And then we read, not in this week's reading, but you can continue reading in the text in the Parsha. That is not in this week's reading that we do here at Ruach. We were reading the third Sidra, the third section. But if you went on to the fourth, Moses does go to the Lord, and the Lord answers him. So, I would like to explore with you how love works itself out in this passage, how it is revealed. And hopefully we can all glean ways that our love can grow. So that's the whole idea. Let's talk about daughters in ancient times. And what's very interesting is that according to Sumerian law, and the Sumerians were another people who lived before the time we're reading, but they were a people from around that time, and they had a rather sophisticated law code, and the Egyptians did too. And for 1,000 years prior to Moses, women could inherit property. And the question's raised, if we're supposed to be so enlightened by the giving of the Torah, how come there was an issue with granting property to women in Israel when there was no issue among the Sumerians or even the Egyptians, who were the bad guys in the story of the Exodus, of course. And so the suggestion has been made that it has to do with the difference between nomadic and agrarian societies. Agrarian societies, because of their stability, can afford to loosen up a little bit in a lot of areas of legal practice. But nomadic societies, because of their inherent instability, tend to emphasize local custom, local tradition, local very static ways of operating as a compensation for the fact that you're always moving and in this state of flux. And I offer that to you as just perhaps why it is that the daughters of Zelophehad had a problem that might not have been a problem in some of the countries round about. And what we see among them is love. And there's a lot of love in this passage. Let's think about it. The first thing that we see is, of course, love for their father. Everyone see that from what we're talking about? Yeah, they loved their dad. And they were concerned that he would not be deprived of his inheritance in Israel, that he would be dishonored by his name disappearing from Israel, and as they married others and would become part of the of other families. And so you see this love for their dad. You know, I can relate to this so easily. I feel profoundly loved. So we had Shabbat dinner at Dave and Serena's house last night. Julie and Bill and all the grandchildren, except for Dan and Tess and their little one, because they live in Florida, we're all there. And Serena makes a delicious dinner. And then, I don't know if you know this, Sue's not here today. She's visiting with her sisters. And so I've been batching it this week. It's been fine. It's been fine. And by time she gets home, the dishes will be done and everything will be fine. Not a word. Everything is going to be great. But there was a problem. How am I going to get home from the kids' house last night? There was no question. Dad, we'll take you home. Dave offered to take me home, Julie and Bill. And so there was no... And you know, it's a little thing. But isn't life made up of little things? You see? Now, there's a lot of applications to this. Not everyone, not all of us here, not all the people listening on the web, grew up in homes where it was easy to love their dad. I want to tell you a key to healing, if you look back on your relationship with your own dad because of his own, perhaps even severe imperfections, very important for your own healing's sake, that you in your mind and in your speech do not endlessly rehearse your father's imperfections, but rather focus on the good things, of which undoubtedly there had to be some. Very, very important. You don't focus on the bad. You focus on the good. And you allow those thoughts to begin dominating your thinking. And somehow, it's a spiritual thing, a psychological thing, somehow healing comes that way. I think you get what I mean, so I'm not going to even explain it any further. It's not necessary. So we see love for their father. And then we see these daughters, these terrific young women, their love for Moses and those in authority in Israel. It says they approached Moses. And the rabbinic commentators note that that word, tikravna, suggests that a certain respectful approaching with a certain sense of propriety. They just didn't bang down the door of the tent of meeting and demand this or that. There was a certain, again, respect. And I would translate that as love. A certain love for the community. And obviously we are dealing in different times and we have to factor in all the cultural differences and all that kind of thing. But nonetheless, I think it's an important dimension. I'll give you an example. In our Union of Messianic Jewish Congregations, I call it the quasi-denomination that we belong to. Denomination is not a bad word. It's a good word in my view. But this isn't quite as intense a relationship as a denominational affiliation, yet at the same time, it's very real, and Ruach Israel is one of the charter members of the Union of Messianic Jewish Congregations. We were at the forming meetings in 1979, and it's an important group. But just this year, just this summer, a major challenge presented itself, not a challenge to us, it was just the most natural thing, but some of the congregations with a more traditional outlook were potentially upset by the fact that the new executive director of the union, a woman was proposed to become the next executive director. Her name is Monique Brumbach, and she is a phenomenally capable person. But some people felt that this is kind of a role for rabbis and shouldn't be. The key to the whole thing had to do with the dignity, the respect that the executive committee of the union showed for the delegates, and her dignity and respect. Rather than getting all uptight about the fact that some people were not wild about her becoming the next executive director, she conducted herself in a way that just showed her capability, her wisdom, her ability to accommodate people of different opinions with the kind of maturity that the position deserved. And the net result is that she was strongly affirmed as the next executive director, and even some of the people who had questions by the end seemed to really accept this as a good thing and recognize that some of their objections were not as critical as they had initially thought. And so it's an example. Monique Tikhravna, she approached the temp, if you will, and didn't bang and conduct herself in a way that was in any way undignified, but rather showed her stuff. And I think we see her as a kind of daughter of these daughters, if you will, in that respect. And what she showed, what Monique showed, was love. She showed love for the community that she was seeking to serve. Love doesn't mean that she agreed totally. Love doesn't mean that she was going to be cowed by negativity and made to run away. That wasn't love. No, she's strong. And she hung in there, but she did it in a way with love. And we can say the same of the daughters of Zelophehad. What else do we see? We see self-love. Now, this is a very important thing. Self-love, very important that we have proper self-love. They could have taken the easy way and said, oh, it's a man's world, forget about it. We'll just, too bad for our dad. He just never had sons. That's just the way it went. Too bad. No. They loved themselves enough to be able and willing to go to Moses and say, hey, what about this? And that's very, very important. There is a wonderful dictum, it's called Hillel's dictum, which many of you have heard, and I want to repeat now because it's so life-giving. And Hillel said this in English. He said, if I am not for me, who will be? But if I am only for myself, you know the next? What am I? And if not now, when? Right? But how does it start off? If I'm not for me, who shall be? In other words, a certain amount of self-love is very, very important. But it's counterbalanced so we don't get into a narcissistic self-absorption that leaves no room for love for other people. But it's hard to love other people if you have no regard for yourself. And I leave that with you. I'm not going to give any particular illustrations, but I think you get the point. You're not supposed to be a doormat. And it's unfortunate that in life sometimes people are doormats and they get into codependent relationships with other people that's destructive for everybody. Right? And the trick is not to do that, but to say, hey, look, I'm a human being, I'm created by God, and I have certain prerogatives by virtue of being his kid that I am not going to let myself be pushed around forever. And again, the trick in life is to balance that against the other imperative, and that is, but if I'm only for me, then what am I? The implied answer is, well, not much. Right? You get it, everybody? Okay, so you have self-love. And then you have Moses' love. Because Moses takes their concerns very seriously. Now, this was really impressive in a world where men called all the shots. Moses hears them and says, you know, I am going to go and I am going to find out what to do. Because so far as Torah had been revealed, there wasn't anything specifically about this. So he does the right thing. And last of all, we see God's love. Because although we only read to the end of this sidra this morning, earlier in our service, if you were to go another verse, you would find God's answer. And God says, you know what? Those women are right. It is not the right thing that the inheritance of their dad, and therefore their own name in Israel, the mark that their family has made, should be lost forever. It's not right. And so, God says, and he gives a list of the orders of inheritance, which includes women can receive the land, women can receive the inheritance, and everybody is happy. Now, all of this begs a question: how is your love life? Are you working at learning how to receive and give love? Even to the scruffy guy in downtown Boston who asked for money. I was there the other day. This happened twice. And I'll just say parenthetically, my first reaction was I'm not interested, because I started with an inner assumption, not that I thought about it, that, you know, who wants my money to go for booze or drugs? And then I thought to myself, you know what? That is absolutely wrong. And I turned around, and it took about 10 minutes to find the guy. And I said to him, listen, my reluctance has to do with I really don't want my money to go for drugs or booze. He said, hey, man, I don't do that stuff. I love to eat. Look at me, he says. Well, big pup, you know, look at me. And I shook his hand and I gave him, I helped him. I wasn't in any kind of self-congratulatory mode. I just felt like I did the right thing. Wouldn't you know, 2 minutes later, the same thing happened, and I didn't have any small bills this time. Helped him too. Providentially, God wanted to make the point absolutely clear to me. Maybe you've been in similar situations. It's the scruffy guy downtown. Are you cultivating the love, the ability to love people who drive you a little bit crazy? No illustrations. What about people who have different views than your strongly held opinions about same-sex marriage or about the upcoming presidential election? One way to love is to actively listen to someone who has a very different view than you without jumping in and disagreeing and showing how they're wrong. Maybe your view isn't as well informed as you think. Maybe the psychological feeling, the sense of assurity that you get because of the people you happen to read and listen to, makes you feel secure and you don't want that disrupted. But maybe an act of love could be to say, listen, tell me your view. I know we don't see it the same way, but tell me why you see it the way you do, and I'm not interrupting. You follow what I'm saying? Don't you wish Congress would do that? I'm very serious. We're seeing a tremendous polarization in American society. Everyone's so sure they're right about everything. Well, many times, 15 years later, I look back from a different point of view and find I wasn't quite so right as I might have thought. Isn't that possible with you? Right? So, We're talking about love. Think about the love expressed by and for Zelophehad's daughters. And then think about the love of Yeshua, the one who gave himself utterly and completely so that Israel and the world might be made whole again. There's an example of love. Are you learning to love and be loved? Answering that question may be the most important question you'll ever answer, both in this world and in the next. Shabbat Shalom, everybody.